This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning, welcome to AM. I'm David Lipson, coming to you from Gadigal land. Solemn and yet spectacular, a service full of symbolism. Britain's longest-serving monarch, Queen Elizabeth II, has been farewelled at a state funeral in London. Hundreds of thousands of people turned out to pay their final respects. Heads of state and dignitaries were among the congregation at Westminster Abbey. The Queen's coffin was then transported to Windsor, where she was interred with her late husband, Philip. Sally Sara reports from London.
After 96 years, it was time for farewell. Queen Elizabeth's coffin was carried on a ceremonial gun carriage drawn by more than 140 sailors from the Royal Navy. The King and members of the royal family joined the procession from Westminster Hall to Westminster Abbey. A large crowd watched on silently. Many had camped through the night.
Very touching, very moving. She was our queen. It has brought the country together.
The Queen's coffin was shouldered into Westminster Abbey.
We entrust the soul of Elizabeth, our sister here departed, to thy merciful keeping.
Thousand official guests filled the abbey, including 500 dignitaries from princes and princesses to world leaders. US President Joe Biden, Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, French President Emmanuel Macron, and Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese were among the mourners. Also on the guest list, more than 180 volunteers, essential workers and community campaigners who were recognised in the Queen's birthday honours earlier this year.
Let us commend to the mercy of God, our Maker and Redeemer, the soul of Elizabeth, our late Queen.
The Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, gave thanks for the life of the monarch.
Few leaders receive the outpouring of love that we have seen. In 1953, the Queen began her coronation with silent prayer, just there, at the high altar.
The congregation and the crowds outside observed 2 minutes silence. In that moment, it almost felt as if the streets of London were still, but not for long. Then a final procession through the heart of London. Retired Gurkha Major Perma Madrali was there to salute the Queen he knew well.
I was a ceremonial guard for Her Majesty the Queen. Everywhere in the world, I believe they are all watching this funeral today.
The military accompanied the Queen's coffin before it was transferred to the state hearse for the journey to Windsor. Inside St George's Chapel, prayers and thanks.
Elizabeth II, by the grace of God, of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and of her other realms and territories, Queen.
Before the final hymn, the orb, sceptre and crown were placed on the high altar. And in tradition, the most senior officer of the royal household, the Lord Chamberlain, broke his ceremonial wand and placed it on the coffin.
We pray that God will give us grace to honour her memory by following her example, and that with our sister Elizabeth at the last, we shall know the joys of life eternal.
The Queen's coffin was lowered into the royal vault. After a lifetime spent in public, the final moments were private. The Queen was interred next to her late husband, Philip. She was laid to rest more than 70 years after taking the throne. It was the end of the Second Elizabethan Age.
Sally Sarah in London. Well, for a few hours, the UK seemed to stop. Outside London, streets emptied, shops closed. People watched on screens at home this one last piece of theatre in a long farewell to the Queen. They also gathered in pubs, even cinemas, united in mourning. Correspondent Alison Horn reports from Kent, about 2 hours east of London.
Can I have seat V5 or V7?
There's your ticket.
Okay. Is it free?
Yeah.
In a small movie theatre in the suburban town of Westgate-on-Sea, hundreds of people are lining up for a special screening. They haven't been able to travel to London to join the crowd saying farewell to Queen Elizabeth, so they're here together to watch it on the big screen. Anthony Stokes is dressed all in black, along with many others.
Nothing would stop me from coming. I'm getting a lump in my throat now thinking about it. I like to be with people, and it's good to share the experience. You feel that you're belonging to the wider aspect of all this.
A condolence book sits on the counter below the snack bar. Maggie Lee Wilkinson leaves a note thanking the Queen for being her rock.
I was born in 1952, which is the year the Queen came to the throne. She'd been a constant in my life. And I really can't believe she's gone. I can't believe it. I'm not ready to accept it yet.
How are you expecting to feel today sitting in there?
Very emotional, very emotional. I would have liked to have gone to London, but I knew I couldn't stand for all that time. I would have really liked to have done it. So this is something else that you can do, I suppose.
A few hundred metres up the road, publican Karen Bohr has grappled all week with the decision to open or close. She wants to show her respect for the Queen, but after a tough 2 years of COVID that included many months of isolating lockdowns, she feels the community needs a place to grieve together.
And it has been sad. You know, I've had sort of tears because it's been going on, hasn't it, since, you know, when she died. Speaking to a lot of my regulars, they got quite tearful when they heard she died. But anyway, it turned out that the people wanted to be together to watch it.
A few dozen people sit sipping coffee or beer during the service, and as it comes to an end, they wipe away tears before raising a glass.
So here's to a lovely lady, and God bless her. The Queen.
As life without the Queen now begins, the heartbreak for many here is still fresh. This is Alison Horn in Kent, reporting for AM.
Well, nearly 200 key workers and volunteers were invited to the state funeral. Pranav Barnott, a lawyer from Essex, was one of them. He was recognised in the Queen's Birthday Honours earlier this year for his efforts supporting people through the COVID pandemic. And he's described to reporter Thomas Arete what it was like to be there.
I was sitting right by the main entrance, the west door, which is where all the dignitaries and presidents and the royal family and the coffin walked into. So I was within touching distance of all the royal family and all the heads of state, as well as the coffin when it entered. So really very close. And it is a very surreal experience. You only see these personalities on television. So to be able to see it in reality is something I'm still trying to comprehend, quite honestly. So much has happened today. I haven't quite been able to digest everything that I've seen, and so much happened so quickly. But you are right. It really was an overwhelming experience.
That's Pranav Barnott, one of the guests at the Queen's state funeral, speaking with News Radio's Thomas Arete. Sarah Richardson is a professor of modern British history at the University of Warwick. I spoke to her a short time ago.
I think this is a unique event, and I don't think Britain will see anything like it again. Partly things like air travel. So seeing 500 heads of state arrive and witness the funeral at Westminster Abbey, I think couldn't have happened with previous monarchs, and I'm sceptical whether it will happen again.
There were huge crowds lining the streets, both in London and Windsor, elsewhere too. How do they compare to other public events we've seen in the past?
So I think it's the sustained number of people that there have been over the 10 days in we've seen in Scotland and then in London, in Windsor, but also people turning up at parks and open spaces and city centres all over the country. So I would say it's probably on a par with things like the Jubilee, the Platinum Jubilee, but that was, you know, one or two days, where this has been 10 days of quite intense public visible mourning.
The service itself was full of symbolism that the monarchy will endure, and we saw the line of succession there. How important is that display?
Well, I think as we've seen through, as soon as the Queen died, that Charles was crowned king, and the succession is really important. At any time when there's a change of monarch, there's always a sense of anxiety, even with someone as well known as Charles, about what's going to happen, what the future's going to be like. So to sort of reinforce the fact that there are successors, that there is, you know, there is a sense that the monarchy will endure, was really important. I think it was very poignant to see the very young Prince George and Princess Charlotte attending the funeral. And I think that was not expected. But the fact that they were able to present themselves so with such composure, I think, sort of demonstrated how their training has already begun.
Yeah, and to be so publicly on display, I mean, that's really part of the contract with the British public, isn't it? That as a monarch, even in such difficult times, you are there for all to see.
Yes, I mean, we saw that the newly elected leader of the Conservative Party, the biggest party in Britain, was unable to form a government without the invitation from the Queen. So that shows the enduring political significance of the monarchy. And in return, there is this sort of expectation that they will be the sort of symbolic head of state. And therefore, even though this was an intensely personal and private moment of sorrow for the family, it was important that as an institution, the monarchy was there to demonstrate, you know, the symbolic leadership that it offers the country.
We saw the Queen's corgis make an appearance. Was there anything else that stood out to you as a personal touch for this Queen, Elizabeth II?
So I think the second funeral that took place at Windsor was where you saw some of the really personal touches. So in addition to the corgis, as the procession went past the stables at Windsor, the mews, the Queen's pony was displayed by the head groom. And that was very, very sad because we know that she was riding up till sort of the summer of this year. So it demonstrated her intense love of horses. But also things like the piper that played the final lament as the coffin was lowered into the vault. I think, you know, that was the Queen's piper who would have awoken her every morning at 9 o'clock by playing the pipes outside her window. It was also something that happened at Prince Philip's funeral. So those sorts of things were the very personal touches.
It has been an incredible spectacle this past 11 days, London all but shut down, and at a time when the nation faces many very real challenges. How do you think the UK will go snapping back to reality when they wake up tomorrow?
Well, I think there are huge challenges in the UK at the moment with things like the cost of living crisis and the implications of Brexit that will not go away. So I'm sure that the political debate was suspended during this period, but it's only been suspended rather than shelved totally. On the other hand, I think that the monarchy is the symbolic role it plays in raising the morale of the country will be more important than ever because of the challenging times that Britain's going to face as we go forward.
Sarah Richardson, great to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
And Sarah Richardson is a professor of modern British history at the University of Warwick. Well, many millions more people around the world watched the live broadcast of the funeral. In Brisbane, some British expats, including former military personnel, gathered at a pub.
It means a great deal to us, and it's quite an emotional night for us, and it's nice to be together. I think, you know, the Queen is an absolute symbol of Britainness, and you know, as ex-members of the British Army, you know, we really hang on to that symbology. And the Queen's been part of that. It is terribly sad. I think it's summed up in you know, the Queen is dead, God save the King. And we're also here not just to mourn the passing of our Commander-in-Chief, but also to celebrate the ascension of the new King.
My family just called from England and said, make sure you're watching it to pay your respects. So, yeah, thought we'd come down to the local. It's a bit different being over here. It's sort of always in the back of our mind when things happen at home, because you're so far away, you know. But we come here to the British pub and we get an atmosphere for all these sort of things.
I thought she had a great life and a long life, and she done a great service for the country. And yeah, I think England and Great Britain and the Commonwealth can be proud of her service there.
That's some of the mourners at a pub in Brisbane. The United States has agreed to a prisoner swap deal with the Taliban, exchanging a Navy veteran for a convicted drug trafficker from Afghanistan. President Joe Biden said it was a difficult decision, but one that reflects a commitment to bringing wrongfully detained Americans home. It's also prompted questions about the future of the relationship between Afghanistan's rulers and the US. Here's North America correspondent Jade McMillan.
At Kabul's international airport, Bashir Nurzai is embraced by Taliban fighters before addressing a room full of officials.
My exchange, I think, God willing, can lead to peace between Afghanistan and America. An American was released and I am also free, with the help of the Taliban government, the Islamic Emirate, and the Mujahideen Holy Fighters.
Bashir Nurzai spent 17 years in US custody after being sentenced to life in prison on drug trafficking charges. US prosecutors had alleged he owned opium fields in Afghanistan's southern province of Kandahar, used to produce opium, which was then imported into the United States. At the time of his sentencing, they described him as being an influential tribal leader and a strong ally of the Taliban. Jonathan Schroden is the director of the Countering Threats and Challenges program at the Virginia-based think tank, the CNA Corporation.
He was one of the earliest supporters of the Taliban movement and someone that the Taliban, again, have been trying to secure his release from U.S. custody for many, many years.
After months of negotiations, Nurzai has been granted clemency by U.S. President Joe Biden in exchange for the release of U.S. Navy veteran Mark Frericks, who was kidnapped 2.5 years ago while working on civilian engineering projects in Afghanistan. The Taliban's acting foreign minister says the swap will open further communication with the United States. But Laura Neek, a professor of political science at Miami University, doesn't believe Washington is any closer to formally recognising the Taliban following its return to power last year.
I think that the Taliban has a long way to go before it will be able to fully engage the U.S. government. And I don't know if the United States government will ever move to recognise the Taliban as the government of Afghanistan.
Mark Frericks has been flown to Doha ahead of his return home. His health is said to be stable. US Secretary of State Antony Blinken has welcomed his release and used it to send a broader message.
I want the families of Americans who are being arbitrarily detained or held hostage anywhere in the world to know that our commitment to them, to bringing their loved ones home, is resolute.
The US is trying to negotiate the release of two high-profile Americans being detained in Russia, basketballer Brittany Griner and former Marine Paul Whelan. To the great frustration of their families, it hasn't yet been able to strike agreement on a proposed prisoner swap for their return.
Jade McMillan reporting, and that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm David Lipson.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast.
With the Queen's death, the UK was plunged into a period of mourning that ended after the funeral. Today, former Chief Foreign Correspondent Philip Williams reflects on what unfolded in the past 10 days and what it says about the British psyche. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.